Good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm your host this morning, Ryan Smithy. Always thankful that you're able to tune in with us, and especially as we continue through our study of the Old Testament this year, invite your attention to Psalm 3 and 4, two great psalms that are before us this morning as we look at the confidence that the psalmist seems likely very much that the psalmist here in both of these psalms was David. In a very difficult portion of his life, and yet he is showing a great confidence and a great trust in God. And so, Lord willing, we'll be there in just a moment. Invite your attention to be turning there if you have your Bibles with you this morning and or where you can open them up and study along with us. Only one announcement here in the studio before me today, and that's the reminder of the gospel meeting that's going to be happening at the Emory Church of Christ in Emory, Texas. That's going to be with John Ratliff on the idea of reviving our passion. That's coming up on May 28th through May 31st. And so that'll be coming up next weekend or this coming weekend. And certainly hope that you can make plans to be there if possible. Also, continue to remind you of the upcoming start of summer youth series. I know the one here in Northeast Texas is going to be kicking off here in just 2 weeks on June the 5th, and so we're looking forward to that. Continue to remind you of upcoming camp sessions. We certainly want to steer you, make you aware of the Camp Ida sessions that are coming up, and you can find more information by visiting campida.com, campida.com, and find information there concerning the camp, and also registration information. And so we'd love to have you check that out. But also, I know there are many other camps that are going on across the country this summer. And so invite you to not only find a good, solid congregation, maybe that help your young people, but also keep these efforts in your prayers. We certainly pray that they enjoy safety as they have a good time together, but first and foremost that the Word of God is taught, and hopefully that they grow to an even greater respect for God, for His Word, as they begin to make decisions that hopefully will dedicate their lives to a lifetime of service to God. Well, this morning, as we mentioned, we'll be in Psalm 3 and Psalm 4, and following the overall kind of theme of authority. And I want to go ahead and try to tie those together. In many ways, I might title these songs or psalms, psalms of security, psalms of comfort, psalms of assurance. But at the same time, what we begin to realize here is, what is the psalmist's source? What is the source for guidance, when things trouble him, when he needs to know direction? Where is he going to go? When he needs something to trust in, is it going to be his own strength? Is it going to be physical armies? Who or what is he going to trust in when he needs comfort? Where is he going to turn? And we see within these two psalms that God is where the psalmist is going to go. And that's the same answer that we need today, that I'm going to turn to God. And so even very difficult and trying times of his life, he was going to have this confidence in God. He was the very source of all things for his life. And God needs to be that same for us. And that's one of the things I love about the Psalms, is I don't believe you can read through the Psalms and not basically identify with all the ups and downs of life, and almost every emotion that you can imagine, there's a psalm for that. You know, the psalmist knew the loftiness of things are going well in his life, and he's thanking God, and we see the loftiness of the praise and the adoration that the psalmist has for God, and he's praising His Word, he's praising His power, His majesty, His glory. We also see difficult and dark days in the psalmist's life. And even there, we see his confidence and his trust in God. And so we get to see really the range of man's emotions. And so whatever aspect, whatever things we find ourselves going through in life, we can identify with the psalmist, that he went through many of these same things, and we find writings concerning these things, and so that ought to give us great hope. I also want to give some credit where credit is due. I have 2 out of 3 books that were written by Roy Deaver, and he wrote a 3-volume set on the Psalms, and one day I hope to find volume 3. But when I reach for the Psalms, and I want to dig into them a little more, that's a volume set that I particularly enjoy. It's a ready reference in many ways. And he went through, did great work in basically outlining every Psalm. And so you can go and you can learn more about the things that were written there. I like many times the way that he has broken up the Psalms and kind of titled these sections of the Psalms, if you will. And so many times I will refer to those outlines, sometimes get that idea for how to break up a psalm and kind of give it some headings or divisions there. And so certainly appreciate the great work of many others, and I invite you to find those resources that you can use and find handy that will help you in your Bible studies. And so that is one that I particularly use here for the Psalms, and he's given me some of the ideas here as far as how we will look at these 2 Psalms. I think we have the time today. I do want to go ahead and read the Psalms that are before us. We'll look at Psalm 3, talk about it, and then come back and read Psalm 4. It says here in Psalm 3, "Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many they are that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter up of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God. For thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone, thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord, thy blessing is upon thy people." Many believe here that this is a Psalm of David, and that it is the time in David's life in which he is fleeing from his son Absalom. Now, again, probably it seems both of these psalms, Psalm 3 and Psalm 4, occurred during this period of his life. And so if you can imagine back even to our studies, and I would refer you back to 2 Samuel chapter 13 through 15 especially, and you can see there this time in David's life. Okay, he had committed adultery with Bathsheba. He had Uriah, her husband, killed. He's lost that child. God has told David, you're going to have problems. You're going to be, you know, suffer in life. There are going to be things that are going to happen. And so I really think God was pointing out to David, there's consequences that are going to be because of your sin. And ultimately, David had set these things up in his life. He had not shown a proper respect unto God. His sons were not always going to show a proper respect unto him. And so here's Absalom that's raised himself up to be a usurper of the throne. And David has had to flee from Jerusalem, and he flees, leaving behind, not really knowing whether he's going to come back or not, but ultimately he's going to have his trust in God. And so if we can place our minds in David's shoes to that period of his life when it seems that everything is turned upside down, when your own son has risen up against you and is not only seeking your throne, but now even seeking your life, when you have had to flee from your city and escape, when you've had to go away from even the very temple there of God, or at least the meeting places, the temple had not yet been built, when he's having to go through that period of his life, this is where we get to read about his trust and his confidence in God. You see, he's not just crying out, as it were, as a whining child. Oh, God, look at everything that's going wrong in my life. And God, why have you let these things happen to me? No, instead we see a man whose faith is unshaken. His confidence, his trust is in God. Even though there are those that rise up against me, even though there are those that shake their head against me, I am going to trust in God. And that's the confidence that I see in David. And so he begins here with a charge in verse 1 and 2, and he looks here to his enemies, and it's the idea of a foolish charge. Oh, Lord, how many are my foes? They are multiplied against me. There are many that rise up against me. That's surely how David felt. It's not just Absalom, but there are those that have surrounded Absalom. There are those that have come to his aid, and so much so that he's been able to mount an army to come after me at the city of Jerusalem and to forcibly take over my throne, and now is even going to be seeking my life. Yes, indeed, there are many that have risen up against me, and there are many that have risen up against me and said, there is no help for him in God. When I look at that, I think here of the additional mental anguish. Not only is he going through this time in his life when he's having to flee, but now there are others that are telling him, David, you're foolish for trusting in God. David, you cannot have confidence in him. And ultimately, what I think of are the fools of Psalm 19 and verse 1. The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. That's almost what is being said unto David here. There's no help for you. There's no hope. You're crying out to God, but he's not going to listen. He cannot help you at this time. But they're speaking as those who are fools, who are saying, there is no God to bring you aid. There is no God to bring you comfort. I think even there of the scoffers, when I think about 2 Peter chapter 3, and in verse 3, he warns those Christians, they're going to be scoffers. There are going to be those who say in verse 4, where's the promise of Christ's coming? Because things just keep going on as they always have. And Peter's going to remind us they're foolish and they're ignorant because they've forgotten history. They've forgotten the great flood of Noah. And that's what he's reminding them there in verse 5 and verse 6. And so there are those scoffers even there that we are warned of that are going to say, there is no God. God's not going to keep his promises. And yet what do we see within David? Even when there are those that are saying, God's not there for you. God's not going to answer. Nevertheless, we're going to see the trust that he has in God that even we need to have, regardless of what men say, that doesn't make it so. They said God will not help you, but David could have the confidence even that we have of Hebrews 13, verse 5 and 6, the God that has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you, that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear what man shall do unto me. And so in the midst of that scoffing of verse 1 and 2, we see the assurance of David in verse 3 and 4. But, that's what's being said by men, but here's the confidence I have. Thou, O Lord, art a shield about me. Thou, O Lord, art my glory. Thou, O Lord, art the lifter up of my head. Who am I going to trust in? Not those people. I'm going to trust in you, God. I'm going to cry aloud. I'm going to pour out my heart. I'm going to pray unto you. And he has confidence here that God is going to answer from his holy hill. You see, he has confidence that, yes, God knows and he cares for the things that I am enduring. Is that the same confidence we have? That regardless of what happens to us as we go through this life, we remember the words of 1 Peter 5 and verse 7, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. Do we as the people of God have the confidence that, yes, I believe and I know that he cares for me? He knows the things that are happening in my life, and so I can pour out my heart unto God. Do I have the confidence of 1 Peter 3 and verse 12, that the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against them that do evil? Is that not his confidence? I know that God is set against those who are wicked, those who are evil, but I know he's going to listen. I know he cares for, and he's going to protect his people. And so regardless of what they say unto me, my confidence is going to be in God. He is the one that is my shield. He is the one that's going to protect me. He is the one that is going to be my glory. He's the one that's going to lift up my head. And the wonderful care there of even one who is drooping because of everything that's going on around him. And here is God as a loving father. It reaches down and says, you can hold your head high because God still cares for you. Yes, I'm going to cry. I'm going to pray unto him, and I'm going to know that his ear is open unto my prayers, and his eye is over the righteous. Then he continues there in verse 5 and 6, and the idea here of the blessings. With that confidence, even though things are falling apart, as it were, in your life, even though there are the scoffers that are attacking you, what is he able to do? Verse 5 and 6, he says, I lay down and I go to sleep. I don't have to worry about those things because I trust in God. And so I can close my eyes at night. I lay down and I sleep. I wake again. Why? I wake because the Lord sustains me. It's his blessings upon me. He says, I'm not afraid of 10,000s of people. Let them come. Let them rise up against me. Because, again, my hope is in God. I couldn't help but think of the wonderful imagery there of Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, therefore I shall not want. The Lord who's going to guide me, the Lord who's going to protect me, the Lord who's going to be with me even in that valley of the shadow of death, when there are those around me that would even want to take my life, when there are those around me who want to destroy me, nevertheless, my confidence, my trust is in God. And so there is peace, there is comfort here. That even with all of this worry, all of this anxiety, all of these problems of his life, here's David that's able to say, I'm going to trust in God. And I can close my eyes at night and I can rest. I know, he says, verse 7, there is deliverance, there is salvation. Arise, O Lord, deliver me, O my God, for thou dost smite my enemies on the cheek, and thou dost break the teeth of the wicked. Who's going to fight for me? You are God. I know you're going to be there for your people. And even today, we need to remember that wonderful message of Acts chapter 4 and verse 12. And there we were told, there is no salvation in any other, for there is none other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved. Our salvation is in Christ. Our salvation, our hope, is in God. And that's the salvation, that's the hope that I see the psalmist, I see David counting on, and he has this confidence in. He knows he's going to be delivered. He's trusting in God, and he knows as he closes that psalm in verse 8, where is this coming from? Deliverance belongs unto the Lord, and thy blessings be upon thy people. It's God that's going to bless me. It's God that's going to be there for his people. And the wonderful idea I scratched down there is, oh, I want to be in that number. That's that line from When the Saints Go Marching In, but is that not true of being with God's people? I want to be a part of that number. I want to be a people that know their God. I want to be that people who God is blessing because they are walking faithfully with Him. I want to be a part of that people whose trust and their confidence is in God, regardless of the things that are happening all around him. And again, that's what I see here in David. If you were to go back there, this is what you're seeing time and again as he is having to flee. Nevertheless, his confidence is going to be in God. Go back there to 2 Samuel chapter 15 and notice this line down in verse 25 and 26. Here the priests have come out as David is fleeing. It says, the king said unto Zadok, carry back the ark of God into the city. Yeah, you've brought it out, but that doesn't belong to me. That belongs unto God. Take it back into the city where it belongs. And if I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here I am. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. Isn't that a wonderful attitude of David? Let him do as seemeth good unto him. If the Lord delights to destroy me, let it be. If the Lord delights to restore me again to Jerusalem, let it be. And I will rejoice in that, and I will rejoice in seeing the ark and the city of Jerusalem once again. But ultimately, what's he saying? He's very much like Jesus in the garden. Let thy will be done, not mine. Can we say of that same attitude, I trust in God, let his will be done. And so there's that wonderful idea. I am going to trust in God. I am going to count on him. We then continue to see that as we turn over to the fourth psalm. Again, we see God our security. God, the one that David is trusting in. And again, it suggested this is the same setting where he is having to flee from Absalom, his son. And he doesn't know everything that's going to be going on. He trusts in God, but he doesn't know what the end's going to be. But ultimately, his desire, God's will be done. And so Psalm 4, here the psalmist writes, hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. Thou hast enlarged me when I was in distress. Have mercy upon me and hear my prayer. O ye sons of men, how long will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you love vanity and seek after leasing? But I know that the Lord hath set apart him that is godly for himself. The Lord will hear when I call unto him. Stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord. There be many who say, who will show us any good? Lord, lift thou up. Excuse me. There be many who say, who will show us any good? Lord, lift thou up the light of thy countenance upon us. Thou hast put gladness in mine heart, more than in the time that their corn and their wine increased. I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety. Again, we see this kind of confidence that the psalmist has in God. One of the things I notice here in verse 1, Brother Deaver titled it simply The Call, it's his prayer, and it's his readiness to go to prayer. Answer me when I call. That's his plea. That's his petition. Answer when I call, O God, my righteousness. Be gracious unto me and hear my prayer. God, I'm begging, will you listen to me? Will you lend me your ear? Let me pour out my petitions. Let me ask of you those things that I need, and let me thank you for those things that you have given unto me. Lord, let me know that you will hear me. And I see in that the idea when things go wrong, who is the psalmist going to turn to? He's going to turn to God. And that was his pattern. That was his operation. We might think also of Psalm 55 and verse 17. Evening and morning and at noon will I pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. You see, when I rise in the morning, when I'm in the middle of the day, and when I begin to go to bed at night, God, I'm going to call upon you. You're going to hear my voice. And so there was a consistency, there was a readiness of prayer that the psalmist is showing us. Where do we go when things begin to go wrong in our lives? Who are we going to turn to? Should we not turn first to God? Are we ready to be in prayer? Well, that's the great example of many men that we have recorded for us on the pages of God's Word. Jesus himself was a great man of prayer. We find him, he's praying in the garden before the time of his trial and crucifixion. We find him, he's praying before he picks his disciples. We see him praying before he's eating these meals and passing out this food before the people. I mean, there's a consistency and a regularity there, even within Jesus' life, that he's going to before God in prayer. When you read the writings of Paul, there's this continual reminder to them, I'm keeping you in my prayers. You are daily in my prayers, that I want to keep lifting you up before the throne of God. But we learn something about Paul there and his regularity of prayer. When I think of a man like Nehemiah, who when he heard of the trouble that was in Jerusalem, he didn't start out making a plan. What did he do? He prayed unto God. And in that mindset began forming a plan to do something about the things that he had heard. Great men of God were great men of prayer. They were ready to go before the throne of God, yes, with thanksgiving, but also ready to go to God with their petitions and their needs. What I love is that we can have confidence that God hears the prayers. That was the confidence the Jews had. It was expressed by that blind man, or it's expressed in that account of the blind man that's recorded for us in John chapter 9. There was this great debate of, well, who is Jesus? He was able to heal this man born from blind from birth, and so who is he? How was he able to restore these things? And as that debate is going on, part of their answer is, we know that God heareth not sinners, but if any man be a worshiper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth. That's the confidence that the Jews expressed. We know that God hears those who do his will. He's not going to listen to someone who's not. And so that was that argument against, well, Jesus can't be this wicked man that you're claiming, because if he was, God wouldn't hear his petition and God wouldn't have healed the man. Even greater than that, though, maybe we could press on into the New Testament and think about First John 5 and verse 14. First John 5 and verse 14, where there John writes, this is the confidence we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he heareth us. Is that not a great benefit to us? Does that not bring you great joy that if I'm a child of God, if I'm walking faithfully with him, that when I pray unto God, he's going to hear me? He's going to grant my petition according to his will? That ought to bring me great joy. It ought to remind me, regardless of what's going on, regardless of how big or how small I think that a thing is, I can bring it before the throne of God. And the psalmist was certainly willing and ready to go before God in prayer. When things were going wrong, when he had difficulties, when things were going great, yes, there he was going to go unto God. But then he is going to speak against his enemies again there in verse 2. And he had spoken, he said, sons of men, those who are fighting against him, those who have set themselves against God and against his people, how long will you turn my glory into shame? You're trying to shame me by the things that I'm doing right. How long will you love vanity and seek after leasing? In other words, some have expressed those verses as this idea, oh, men, how long shall you shall my honor suffer shame? You've attacked me, but you've attacked me unmercilessly. It's not deserved. How long will you love vain words and seek after lies? You're speaking that which you know not. One of the things that I'm reminded there, even of King David, and then in our lives, sometimes when we try to do that which is right and we try to do that which is good, men are going to still speak evil of us. Did not Jesus talk about that as he was even there in the Beatitudes? In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 10 and following there, he had said, blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Sometimes even when you're trying to do that which is right, you're going to be persecuted. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Don't be surprised. That's how men have always treated the men of God. They've always spoken against them. They've always persecuted them, always reviled them. They've always spoken falsely against them. And so, in a sense there, I might word it this way, count it as a badge of honor. That when that happens unto you, that's the way they treated great men such as Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Daniel and others. Great men of God, who they also spoke falsely against. And so David is reminding us here, these charges that have been leveled against me and the things that men are saying against me, they're lies, they're made up words, and yet they're attacking me with these things. And so don't be surprised when men speak evil of you. Even as we go about our lives today, such should not be a surprise unto us that we would be evil spoken of. Peter speaks a lot about that in 1 Peter. And one of the places he would do so is there in 1 Peter chapter 4. And he's going to tell us there in verse 1 that we should, let me back up into verse 1 there of chapter 4, 1 Peter. For as much then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind. For he that hath suffered in the flesh hath ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lust of men, but to the will of God. There's the exhortation. That's how we ought to be living. The idea that I'm not living according to the world anymore, but I'm living according to the will of God. Verse 3, for the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles. However long you lived in sin was too long. When we walked in lasciviousness and lust and excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries. But now that we've changed verse 4, wherein they think it strange that you run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. Guess what? When you try to do that which is right, when you won't live according to the way of the world, don't be surprised when they speak evil of you. Don't be surprised when they make false accusations of you. But make sure that you're suffering for righteousness' sake. 1 Peter 4 and verse 15, let none of you suffer as a murderer, as a thief, or as an evildoer, as a busybody in other men's matters. Yet if any man suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. I think that's the confidence we see here in David. They're speaking evil against me, and yet my confidence is going to be in God. When we try to do that which is right today, are men not going to speak evil of us? But let our confidence be in God. He will continue, psalmist there in Psalm 4, with his admonition, even unto his enemies. Again, know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord hears when I call unto him. I'm part of the people of God. God's going to listen to me. He's going to listen to the godly man, to the righteous man, the one that's walking with him. And so as he continues in that admonition, be angry and sin not. Commune with your own hearts upon your bed and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord. A lot of verses came to mind there, and one of the ideas there I see is just that idea of be separate. And so I think of 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 17. Our exhortation from God is, wherefore come out from among them, be ye separate, saith the Lord, and I touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and I will be a father unto me, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. Come out from the world. Don't be conformed to the world, Romans 12 and verse 2, but transformed by the renewing of your mind by the very will of God. That's what we need to be striving for. And so as I look at the psalmist there in Psalm 4, in verse 3 through 5, I see this idea. He's ultimately telling those who are speaking evil against him, who are reviling him, don't get mad at me. Don't get mad because I'm doing that which is right and you don't like it. Think about Cain and Abel. Did not Cain get mad at Abel because Abel had done right and Cain had not, and God was receptive unto Abel's sacrifice but not unto Cain's, and so Cain got mad at Abel? Wait a minute, Cain, don't get mad at Abel because he did what was right. Instead, just go and do right. And that's what I see David expressing here. Don't be mad at me because you're not doing right, and I am. Instead, what you need to do is change your ways. Why don't you go and do that which is right? That's what he's asking of them. And so don't let this idea that he's going to express there in verse 4, stand in awe and sin not. Possibly that's expressed there again in Ephesians 4 and verse 26, even as we have that same admonition, don't let the sun go down upon your wrath, be angry and sin not. Take care of it. Deal with it. And deal with it today. Don't be angry at me. Don't be mad at me as a people of God. You go and do that which is right. I see that again expressed there in verse 5. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness. You see, don't just offer unto God, but go and offer that which is right. Do that which is good, and will you not be accepted of him? John 4 and verse 24, Jesus reminds us that God desires worshipers who are going to worship him in spirit and in truth. You go with the right heart, the right attitude, and do the right thing, God is going to accept you. And also there's a comfort, I hope, that comes to us even in those verses, and particularly there in verse at the beginning of verse 3 as we back up just a little bit. Don't you know the Lord has set apart him that is godly unto himself? The Lord has set apart the righteous unto himself, and that ought to bring us great comfort and joy. John wrote it this way in 1 John 3 and verse 1, behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore, the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Again, don't be surprised when the world rejects you. Don't be surprised when the world doesn't like to have its faults pointed out, because you're walking in the light and they're not. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness doesn't want to be exposed. But there's the other beauty of that, and it's that we get to be called the sons of God. That's the love of God. He separated us unto himself. I think again there of 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. Who are we? We are a chosen generation. We are a royal priesthood. We are a holy nation. We are a peculiar people. We should show forth the praises of him who hath called us out of darkness into his marvelous light. There's a reminder there. We are the called out. We are that special people unto God. That ought to bring us comfort. The world is reviling you. The world is wagging their head at you. The world is bringing problems and difficulties, and things aren't going maybe the way that you think that they ought to. Don't forget that you are a child of God if we're in Christ Jesus and walking faithfully with Him. David could take comfort. God has separated the righteous, the godly, unto Himself. If you've set yourself against me, you've set yourself against God, because I'm trying to live for God. And so don't be mad at me when I do that which is right. Instead, you go and you change your ways. Then there in verse 6, there's this idea of skepticism. There be many that say, "Who will show us any good? Lord, lift thou up the light of thy countenance upon us." Another expressed it this way. There are many who say, "Oh, that we might see some good. Lift up the light of thy countenance upon us, O Lord." How many fail to appreciate the blessings of God in their life? I've said it before, I'll say it again. If we are looking for things to be negative and critical about, we're going to find them. In fact, we're going to be overwhelmed by those things. We can find those things to be negative about. We can find those things that we wish were better. We can find those things to complain about. We can find those things that just aren't going our way. But you know the other thing we can do? We can look, we can investigate, and we can find those blessings of God. Yes, if we look for good, if we count our many blessings, we likewise would be overwhelmed. You're going to find what you're looking for. If you want to find all the negative in life, you're not going to have a problem. You're going to have plenty to find. But if you want to find that which is right and good, if you want to see the blessings of God, you're going to be able to find those things as well. Why? Because, as Jeremiah said in Lamentations chapter 3, he was thankful for the very mercies of God, which are new every morning. Lamentations 3 and verse 23. Yes, the very mercies of God, they are new every morning. They are refreshed. They are renewed. He continues to pour them out. He continues to bless us with these things in our life. I think there as well of James chapter 1 and verse 17, as he again is turning our eyes to God, and he says, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning." Don't forget the blessings of God, because everything that we have is from God. And so with that in mind, then we have this prayer of thanksgiving in verse 7 and 8. He is going to express joy even in the midst of all of the trouble that he's enduring. And he says, "Thou, God, you have put more joy in my heart than when they have their grain and their wine abounding." There's more joy in my heart from what God has given me than in the heart of the world when they are prospering. The world thinks that's what's going to bring them joy and happiness and contentment. When they think things are going their way, when their coffers are swelling, when everything's going great for them, the psalmist says, "I have greater joy than that. And it's not found in the things of this world, but in God. And so, in peace, I will both lie down and sleep, for thou alone, O Lord, makest me to dwell in safety." You see, I see there again the thanksgiving that is expressed by the psalmist. And the thing that I hope we remember is we need to have that same thanksgiving that is poured out unto God. Did Paul not write in Colossians 4 and verse 2, "Continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving"? Oh, take your petitions before God. Oh, tell him the things that you need. Oh, tell him the problems of your life. But you make sure you're just as quick to go before the throne of God and give him thanksgiving for all that he has blessed you with and for all that he has given unto you. See, what I see within the life of David, within this psalm, is the idea that even though things are going wrong all around me, even things that aren't going as I want to, nevertheless, I'm going to rejoice in God. I'm going to take comfort and peace and security from Him. A few great verses there. I think about Philippians 4 and verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. Are things going your way and things just happening just right in your life and you think, man, they couldn't be any better? Rejoice in the Lord. Things just kind of mediocre. They're drifting along as they have. Rejoice in the Lord. Things going difficult. Maybe you're going to be locked up in prison. Maybe people are saying things against you falsely. Maybe your own son has risen up against you and you've had to flee from before you and your throne's at stake. Rejoice in the Lord. That's what I see within the life of David here. That's what he was able to do in his life. That's what Paul is speaking of here. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me, Philippians 4 and verse 13. It's the idea there that whether I am abounding or whether I am abased, nevertheless, I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. I know how to be hungry. I know how to abound. I know how to suffer need. I know how to be full. Whatever state I'm in, therewith I've learned to be content, Philippians 4 and verse 11. There is a contentment that I see within David. Oh, he's calling out to God. He's expressing these cares and these desires unto him, but his confidence and his hope is still in God. Whatever state I'm in, therewith to be content. Again, I go back to that idea of 2 Samuel 15, verse 25 and 26, when he is saying, let God's will be done. And that's the same attitude that we need within our lives. Where am I going to find peace? Not going to be in this world. It's not going to be in physical contentment, in financial prosperity, but in God. Philippians 4 and verse 9, those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you. You want to have peace in life? You want to have the peace that David could have even as he's having to flee from his life or for his life? Follow God. That's where his source of contentment was. It's our only source of contentment even as well. I'll look back and make a comparison here. In the fifth verse of chapter 3, he said, I laid me down and slept. I awakened, for the Lord sustained me. And now in chapter 4, or Psalm 4, and in verse 8, he says, I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety. My confidence and my trust is in you, Lord. And one of the things I see there about the Psalms is that this is more than what I sometimes refer to as a book knowledge. There's the book knowledge that says, I know I ought to trust in God. There's the book knowledge that says, I know peace is only going to be found in God. But what I see within the psalmist's life oftentimes is what I call an experiential knowledge. In other words, this is a knowledge that he has gained by experience. He knows this to be the case. The other day, someone was telling me about a chemical that they had used to clean a concrete floor. And the way this man was describing it, he says, when you use this chemical on that concrete floor, now you're going to want to wear some good rubber gloves and not let that get on your skin, because it is going to hurt like crazy if it gets on your skin. And I looked at him and I said, that sounds to me like experience. That's not something you just read off the label. You see, the label might say, don't let this contact your skin. Severe burning may occur. Or you think, okay, I want to wear gloves. I know that's going to hurt. But you have someone that's standing there and says, if this touches your skin, it's going to burn and it is going to hurt. That's someone who's learned that by experience. He got some of that on his hands, and so he knew the pain that it would cause if it came in contact with you. When I look at the psalmist, he's not just saying, I know I need to trust in God, I know my confidence needs to be in him. He's saying, I have put my confidence in him, and I have seen that the Lord is with me. I've experienced it in my life. And so verse 5, I laid down and slept, and the Lord kept me, and I was able to wake again the next morning. And so guess what? As you reach the end of Psalm 4, now again he's able to say, I have confidence that that's going to happen in the future. And so I will be able to lay me down in sleep and have peace. I have confidence that that's going to keep on being true, because Lord, you have been with me time and again, and you've been with me through all of this. You've been with me through the good. Now I have no doubt that you're going to be with me even in these difficult times and in these difficult days. And so I see these as two great psalms of comfort and of security, of the one who knows that he can place his confidence in God. He is the very source of all things, and so he is turning to God. What about you? What about me? Are we turning to God when things are going well, and are we turning to God when things are going poorly in our lives? I hope we can look at the example here that the psalmist has set for us and strive to do the same in our lives. Well, again, I love looking at the Psalms. I appreciate you being with us today. Hope that you'll be able to join us tomorrow morning. Lord willing, we'll be looking at Psalm 5 and Psalm 6 as we continue in this study. And so I hope that you'll not only stay listening right here to the Gospel Radio Network today, make sure you're back with us once again tomorrow as we continue in this study of the Old Testament. And as always, as we sign off, we hope that you have a great day.